The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. What's next for Republicans?
It basically puts their efforts to repeal Obamacare on a long hold.
One of the highest-ranking Vatican officials in court charged with sexual abuse.
Many waited outside the court, relieved this day had come.
Later, how many of us sweat too much?
Hyperhidrosis is sweating beyond the needs of the body to cool itself.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. On Friday afternoon, the president replaced his chief of staff, Reince Priebus, with Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly. The president announced the move in a tweet saying, quote, "He has been a true star of my administration." Also keeping the White House busy this weekend, North Korea. After confirmation, it launched a ballistic missile Friday that apparently landed off the coast of Japan. Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow in foreign policy at the Brookings Institution.
It could obviously be dangerous to any kind of a ship, and the odds of a ship being hit by a missile that doesn't even have a warhead on top of it are pretty low, almost astronomically low, but that's no excuse for complacency or wanton disregard for others. But alas, that's the kind of country we're dealing with in North Korea.
Also this weekend, it appears that GOP's efforts to repeal parts of Obamacare are on ice.
Good morning, Senator. Okay.
Republican Senator John McCain was back at work Friday morning after casting the deciding ballot overnight. His thumbs-down vote doomed the GOP's latest attempt to repeal Obamacare.
The ayes are 49, the nays are 51. The motion is not agreed to.
Fellow Republicans Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, along with every Democrat, voted against the so-called skinny bill that aimed to repeal selected parts of the Affordable Care Act.
This is, clearly a disappointing moment. Now imagine many of our colleagues on the other side are celebrating.
We are not celebrating. We are relieved.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell now says it's time to move on, but did not rule out working with Democrats to fix Obamacare's problems.
So now I think it's appropriate to ask, what are their ideas?
We're saying to Mitch McConnell, to Speaker Ryan, to any Republicans, that we stand here ready to fight for bringing down the cost of prescription drugs, making health care more affordable.
President Trump was clearly disappointed with the outcome. On Twitter, he wrote, "Three Republicans and 48 Democrats let the American people down." The president now says he's ready to let Obamacare implode. Mola Lenghi for CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The new White House communications director is in hot water again for comments he made to a New Yorker magazine writer that reveal rising tensions within the Trump administration.
Tensions between the new White House communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, and Chief of Staff Reince Priebus spilled out into the public Thursday. In a New Yorker magazine article, Scaramucci unloaded on Priebus, calling him an expletive, paranoid schizophrenic, a paranoiac, and said he'll be asked to resign very shortly. Scaramucci also took aim at White House chief strategist Steve Bannon, saying, "I'm not trying to build my own brand off the strength of the president." White House senior advisor Kellyanne Conway defended Scaramucci on Fox News.
"I think he's passionate about the president. It sometimes gets the best of him."
The infighting within the Trump administration isn't just confined to the West Wing staff. It extends into the president's cabinet as well.
If he wants to make a change, he can certainly do so, and I would be glad to yield in that circumstance, no doubt about it.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions has been under fire from the president himself because Sessions recused himself from the Russia investigation. President Trump's public rebuke of his own attorney general has raised eyebrows on Capitol Hill.
The way that Jeff Sessions has been treated, it did not go over well with Republicans in the United States Senate.
Sessions says he will not resign unless the president asks him to do so. Seth Lemon for CBS News, the White House.
Let's talk now with CBS News political director Steve Chigueras, who's here in studio with us in the Washington Bureau. Let's start with health care. What kind of setback is this for Republicans?
It's huge. It basically puts their efforts to repeal Obamacare on a long hold. And you heard Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell say he was disappointed. This is not going to happen anytime soon. This is something that Republicans have been promising for 7 years. They've been talking about it. They've been passing repeal legislation, knowing it wasn't going to get signed by a Democratic president over the last 7 years. Now that they had their opportunity to do something about it, they were unable to do that.
Schumer wants bipartisan legislation to improve Obamacare, not dismantle it. What's the likelihood that could actually happen?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are wishing them luck on that one. It's unclear where you even begin on that. Think about, again, Republicans talking about repeal. Democrats have said, yeah, we're happy to sit down, but there are certain issues off the table. Tax cuts, Medicaid cuts, that's going to alienate a bunch of Republicans as well. So it's just sort of unclear what the starting point is.
How much of a dig is this to President Trump, who has been calling for this since he was a candidate?
It's definitely a dig against President Trump. But I think we have to step back and just, again, let's just say Republicans have been calling for this for 7 years. Yet for 7 years, Republicans have been unable to agree on what they wanted to replace Obamacare with. So the president wins in November. Republicans have an opportunity. We're going to go after Obamacare. Yet over the course of 9 months, they are unable to come up with something that they can agree on to get through both houses of Congress and get on the president's desk.
All right, let's talk about infighting at the White House. We've seen this now with this new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, who made these comments Thursday in an article in the New Yorker magazine after he spoke to a writer. Mm-hmm. What do you make of this? Is this a distraction to what the Trump administration is trying to get done?
Couple of things. First of all, it comes during a week, obviously, when the president it was facing a major legislative setback. And so you don't want this kind of story. Your new incoming communications director really sort of ruffling feathers within the White House while they're dealing with other crises, which was, can they get an Obamacare repeal through the Senate? So that's one distraction. But I think the bigger deal is this, and it's not like the average American knows who Scaramucci is or this has a direct effect on them. But where it has an effect is on members of Congress, especially Republicans who are trying to work with this White House. And they see this, chaos playing out in public. You have a new communications director coming in and undermining the current chief of staff. A chief of staff, by the way, that these Republicans have known for years, the former Republican National Committee chairman. So it raises a lot of questions about where are they going in terms of future work with the White House. They have a lot of other legislation, a big agenda they want to get through, and they're just a lot of question marks every single day. And every time one of these kerfuffles happens, there are more question marks between how are Republicans in Congress going to work with this White House? What is the plan moving forward? And all this chaos, is it ever going to end up in anything that they can show to voters when they are running for re-election or running in the midterms next year?
CBS News political director Steve Chigueras on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Still to come, one former Navy SEAL who transitioned to a woman response to President Trump's ban on transgender people in the military.
The repercussions is going to be terrible.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Most of the Pentagon was apparently in the dark about the president's decision announced on Twitter to ban transgender people from serving in the military, calling them a disruption and saying the government shouldn't have to pay for their medical care. Correspondent Cammie McCormick has more from the Pentagon.
General Mark Milley said he learned about the ban from news reports, not the president himself.
He didn't do that. Well, nor would I expect him to do, nor is there any kind of requirement to do that.
Milley was asked at the National Press Club if there had been problems in the Army due to the policy allowing transgender people to serve openly.
This is a complex issue, and there's a variety of challenges out there that we have to deal with, and we've been working through it. But this is not clean cut either way.
Joint Chiefs Chairman General Joseph Dunford sent a note to service chiefs and commanders saying there will be no modifications to the current policy until the president's direction has been received by Defense Secretary Mattis. Cammy McCormick, CBS News, The Pentagon.
Now let's talk about the president's decision with Kristen Beck. Kristen, you served as a Navy SEAL for years. You were deployed in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. You came out after you left the military in 2011 as a woman. What's it like to hear this ban on people who are transgender serving in the military?
It's disturbing because forever I've been told that people are more important than equipment. And right now the president is saying otherwise. So you need to care about the people. If you want to care about the people, you take care of the people. And you take care of your people in uniform.
What do you imagine the impact will be on what we're hearing about thousands of people already serving in the military who are transgender?
Well, it seems that President Trump only communicates on Twitter, so I communicated back to him. And I communicated back to him that, President Trump, you have opened up a can of whip-ass. Because you have to consider that America is a very diverse country. And if you take a look at it, if you add all those minority groups up who have been picked on, who have been, you know, subjugated to misrule and unequal treatment over and over and over again, the LGBT community is quite a large community. Now, if we could all get together and you could understand that the largest grassroots community you could ever put together would be all of us combined, these diverse, smaller minority communities. And I think we can, because if you start talking about saying it's illegal, it's against this, it's against that for transgender people, what's next? So my eye color is incorrect? So we're going to go back to the 1950s when it was a segregated military? So, I mean, where does this stop? And the thing is we've been growing as a nation, and we've been, you know, understanding and living our own personal liberties as a people, which is what America defends. Now, there's nothing wrong with people being transgender. I've been transgender since I was born, and I served for 20 years as a Navy SEAL, and I served with honor. Now, there's people doing it every day, and we've been doing it since the Revolutionary War. They've been doing it since the beginning of time. People are people. This is a human rights. This is something we shouldn't be fighting over.
Kristen, how do you respond to supporters of the president's decision and conservatives who say this is a disruption, that this isn't consistent with the military? The military isn't ready for this.
This is going back in time. You're already making me use different bathrooms. You're already separating me with my restroom right now, telling me I can only use a unisex bathroom. I can go into the one-stall gender-neutral bathroom. There's a male and female, and then there's gender-neutral. So you're already doing to me what you did back in the 1950s and before. This is disgusting, appalling actions by the leaders in America. We're better than this.
Were you hopeful that under President Obama, under this policy that the Pentagon was moving forward with, there would be more inclusion for transgender people?
Yes. President Obama did a great job. He was moving the country forward to an equal country where everyone is treated with dignity and respect. The door was open, and we're saying, hi, we're here, we exist, and now that door is slammed, and now the repercussions is going to be terrible.
What is the state of discrimination, do you think, in the military against people who are transgender?
Well, it seemed like it was getting a little bit better, and now I can only see it getting much worse because people will follow their leader because that's what leadership does, and I think it's just a poor display of improper leadership.
Kristen Beck, thanks for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Now for the other side, let's talk with Peter Sprigg. He's a senior fellow at the Conservative Family Research Council. What does this mean to you?
We certainly welcome President Trump's decision to reverse President Obama's policy to allow transgender people who identify as transgender to serve in the military. We feel that one of the core problems is that transgender, those who identify as transgender who have had gender reassignment surgery or hormone therapy, have special medical needs, which, first of all, the taxpayer should not be required to pay for, and secondly, which limit their deployability because they may not be have access to the medical care that they need everywhere in the world. So it certainly is a decision in favor of military readiness and against political correctness, and we welcome it.
But certainly the military has made concessions for other groups of people, including gays, women. How is this anything different besides just the cost?
Well, this is different because of the specific medical needs. I mean, there are a lot of people, a lot of patriotic Americans who would love to serve their country, but who are denied the ability to serve in the military because of particular medical conditions. And I think this should just be viewed in that light.
If the president said, okay, listen, you, transgender people can serve, but we can't pay for your medical treatment, would that be acceptable?
Well, we also believe that the presence of people who identify as transgender or who have changed their gender marker is disruptive to good order, morale, and discipline in the military. I mean, this is something where they may be free to do that in the civilian world, but in the military there are higher standards of morale and discipline, and this is simply inconsistent with that.
Family Research Council Senior Fellow Peter Sprigg. Investigators are trying to find out why a ride called the Fireball malfunctioned at the Ohio State Fair, flinging off riders and killing one.
Dramatic amateur video shows a row of seats from the pendulum-style thrill ride appearing to detach from its housing. With the sound of the crash stunning onlookers, at least two people were thrown from the ride.
I heard a girl scream help, and I look over and I see something fly out. And then I seen it slap to the ground.
Go ahead, back up a little bit.
First responders and witnesses rushed to help the victims, who were scattered across the ground.
I'm so scared.
The Ohio State Fair is one of the nation's largest, with hundreds of thousands of visitors each year. Ohio Governor John Kasich ordered all rides shut down after the malfunction.
This is the worst tragedy in the history of the fair. But we'll recover from this as well, and we'll move on. But that doesn't mean we won't grieve for what happened here tonight.
Both law enforcement and the Department of Agriculture are investigating the cause of Wednesday's incident, but say the fireball passed inspection.
The chief inspector here said that a tragedy like this hits everyone hard. He said his own grandchildren get on these rides, and no shortcuts were taken. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Columbus.
Up next, a high-ranking Vatican official in court on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Upgrade your summer cookouts with Gourmet Omaha Steaks. They offer a huge menu of steaks and more. All high-quality ingredients, and every purchase is backed by Omaha Steaks' 100% unconditional guarantee. Right now, you can get this limited-time deal, an exclusive savings of 80% on a very special combo, the Summer Sensation. You get all of this. 2 5-ounce filet mignons, 2 5-ounce top sirloins, 4 4-ounce boneless pork chops, 4 3.5-ounce chicken fried steaks, a 12-ounce package of all-beef meatballs, 4 4-ounce Omaha Steak burgers, 4 4-ounce gourmet jumbo franks, a 16-ounce package of Omaha Steakhouse fries, 4 caramel apple tartlets, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus 4 more Omaha Steak burgers. This exclusive package is only $49.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type FTN in the search bar, and add the Summer Sensation to your cart. Again, visit omahasteaks.com and enter code FTN in the search bar to get this great package for $49.99.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Russia has ordered the U.S. to cut its diplomatic staff. It's also seizing 2 U.S. diplomatic properties there after Congress passed new sanctions against the country that also target North Korea and Iran. Correspondent Charlie Daggett has reaction from Moscow.
Senior Russian officials say the new sanctions make no sense and move already tense U.S. relations into uncharted territory. Andrei Kortanov, director of a prominent Russian think tank, told us Russians aren't happy being thrown into the same basket as Iran and North Korea.
So basically the signal is that you three bad guys, you will get the same treatment from the United States Congress. And with all due respect, but Russia is not North Korea.
But the sanctions also have some unintended consequences.
The bill, as written, now targets any company that contributes to the maintenance or construction of Russia's energy export pipelines. Instead of just punishing the Russians, they snare European and American business in their web.
Charlie Daggett, CBS News, Moscow.
Pope Francis's top financial advisor at the Vatican appeared in an Australian court for the first time, charged with sexual abuse. More from reporter Scott Maiman.
For those who've accused the church of sexual abuse over the years, it was a momentous day.
My highest hope is that not to have to endure some of the things that we've had to endure. I take my hat off to all the people who ended up in mental institutions, in jail, or in a life of crime, and we stand up for these people as well.
After being granted leave from the Vatican, Cardinal George Pell, the third highest-ranked official in the Catholic Church, returned to Australia 2 weeks ago to appear in a Melbourne court this week, charged over sexual abuse offences stemming from a worldwide long-running investigation into abuse within the Catholic Church. Many waited outside the court, relieved this day had come.
A lot of feelings. That's what I was there for, to be there, to witness this historic moment, and if anything, to be in support of the complainants who often don't get a lot of support.
Others turned out in a show of support for the Cardinal, reflecting on the good things the church has done.
My daughters are going to an affordable Catholic school that we wouldn't have been able to afford. He's put it into, it's in a poor socioeconomic area, and they wouldn't have been able to afford to get that education if it wasn't for different things he put in.
Proceedings were brief, lasting just 6 minutes. Prosecutors not yet ready to begin their case. The judge giving them until September to prepare a brief to be given to the Cardinal's defence team. The Cardinal denies any wrongdoing. He'll be back in an Australian court in October with plans to clear his name. Scott Maiman for CBS News, Brisbane, Australia.
Tensions remain high at a holy site in Jerusalem. Our Robert Berger is there.
Thousands of Israeli police and soldiers have deployed in and around Jerusalem's old city amid fears of more violent Palestinian protests after Friday Muslim prayers. To curb unrest, Israel has barred men under the age of 50 from entering the Mosque of Al-Aqsa, the site Jews call the Temple Mount. Israel's removal of controversial new security measures at the holy place has failed to ease tensions. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
London police say there are now reasonable grounds for corporate manslaughter charges after the deadly Grenfell Tower fire last month. Sky News correspondent Charlotte Lomas has more.
The Metropolitan Police have sent letters to residents directly affected by the fire, and they've said that after amassing a huge amount of material and they've taken a large number of witness statements, they now have said that the officer leading the investigation has notified the Royal Borough of Kensington and Chelsea that there are reasonable grounds to suspect that each organisation may have committed corporate manslaughter.
There's new concerns about visiting some of Mexico's most popular tourist resorts. Here's correspondent David Begno in Playa del Carmen.
Mexico is the top international destination for U.S. travelers. Nearly 30 million Americans visited the country last year. The U.S. State Department is now warning people to consume alcohol here in moderation and get medical help if they feel sick while drinking in the country. Back in January, Abby Connor and her family from Wisconsin arrived at the Paraíso del Mar for vacation. It is one of 10 Iberostar hotel and resorts in Mexico. By dinner time, 20-year-old Abby and her 22-year-old brother Austin had reportedly been found unconscious in the pool after drinking at the bar. Both were taken to the hospital, and Abby died days later. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports dozens of other people also claimed they were given bad alcohol at Mexican resorts, causing them to be sick or black out. More than 1.4 million gallons of tainted alcohol have been seized in Mexico since 2010. Some of the counterfeit alcohol is said to contain pure industrial ethanol, an ingredient used in many rubbing alcohols. Iberostar Hotel and Resorts told CBS News they only purchase sealed bottles that satisfy all standards. One of their chief complaints has been the lack of what appears to be an urgent response by the authorities here in Mexico. So if you get sick, contact the U.S. Embassy immediately. But if you're buying alcohol, make sure the bottle you bought was sealed before you got it or the can was unopened. David Begno, CBS News, Playa del Carmen, Mexico.
Prosecutors say a Utah man has been charged with murdering his wife aboard an Alaska cruise. Correspondent Jamie Yukas has more from Juneau.
Princess Cruises says the domestic dispute occurred on board the Emerald Princess at about 9 p.m. on Tuesday.
Whoever was talking was pretty scared because their voice was shaking.
Ruby Plata was with her husband when she heard an announcement over the intercom.
They said it was a domestic altercation.
1,100 crew members and 3,400 passengers were on board, including Chris Seaman.
It became apparent that something serious had happened, but we didn't know how serious.
The Emerald Princess spans the length of nearly three football fields and has 19 decks. Seaman says he was on the ninth level in a room across from where it happened.
One of the little girls from that room came running out calling for help, that her parents had been in a fight. She sounded pretty desperate.
The ship departed Seattle on Sunday for a seven-day round-trip cruise, leaving Ketchikan on Tuesday around 3 p.m. The death forced the crew to divert the ship to Juneau, where it arrived just before 8 a.m. on Wednesday, about 6.5 hours ahead of schedule.
The Emerald Princess stayed docked here until shortly before midnight Alaska time. After 8 hours of being stuck on board, passengers were allowed to be on land for about 6 hours before the ship continued on its route from here in Juneau to Skagway, Alaska.
For us, it's a weekend. For them, it's the rest of their lives.
Nicole and Bryce Beckstrom used to live across the street from the family involved. They say the couple was celebrating an anniversary.
To find out that it was her was shocking.
Passengers on board say a murder mystery dinner was taking place at the time the incident occurred, and while there was initially some confusion, they quickly realized how serious the situation was. Later today, the FBI will announce charges against the individual involved. Jamie Yukas, CBS News, Juneau, Alaska.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, how much is too much sweat?
You're going through your clothes quickly. You're changing your shirt multiple times during the day. Your hands are dripping with sweat.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Denver's trying to keep immigration and customs enforcement agents out of courthouses. Correspondent Barry Peterson explains why.
This was an arrest by ICE agents at the front door of Denver's courthouse. The illegal immigrant, with a felony conviction in his background, was wrestled into custody. He has since been deported.
You guys hurt him!
But showdowns like these, say Denver officials, are a risk to public safety. Denver's Mayor Michael Hancock asked ICE to stop making arrests at the city courthouse.
We want people to trust the judicial system, and we need them to show up.
Like schools, churches, and hospitals, he wants the courthouse designated as a sensitive location, which would prevent agents from arresting immigrants there. ICE refused his request. Hancock says undocumented immigrants without any criminal history are now avoiding the courthouse. At least 9 cases of domestic violence have been dropped when victims told authorities they were afraid to come to the courthouse for fear of being arrested by ICE.
When witnesses and victims of crime are not showing up to, you know, testify, now we cannot pursue the individuals who have perpetrated the crime. Now, how does that make us more safe?
The city and county of Denver will not cooperate with the criminal alien program.
Philip Miller oversees deportation agents for ICE.
By not turning over criminal aliens in a safe, secure environment, they're actually putting my officers and the community at risk.
He says Denver isn't cooperating with ICE because Denver is not alerting the agency when it has a violator in custody.
You guys from ICE?
Yes, sir.
So ICE agents check public records for court appearance, and his agents must go to the courthouse or else to homes or workplaces at much higher risk to themselves and the community.
They are beaten up, cut up in fights, scuffles.
And you feel like these things are basically avoidable?
They're absolutely avoidable.
Denver has gone a step further, starting a program aimed at protecting undocumented immigrants with lesser violations. Those with minor traffic offenses are now allowed to send in their plea by mail so they can avoid going to the courthouse. That's important, says this man, who says he was detained and was at risk of deportation after a minor traffic stop.
It made me feel like my life just came crashing down.
He asked us not to use his name. He says in his community, frightened people now go out only when necessary, like getting to work.
A lot of community members feel like they need to be in hiding. Otherwise, that just creates a target in their back.
But, says ICE, They are only doing their best to uphold the law.
It's not hunting, it's doing our job.
Barry Peterson reporting from Denver. Over the past week, many of us have been dealing with unbearable conditions outside, hot and humid, especially here in the Washington swamp. But if you think you're sweating too much, you're not alone. Research suggests more people have a condition called hyperhidrosis than previously reported. Dr. Whitney High is director of dermatology at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. Thanks for talking with us, Dr. High.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What is hyperhidrosis anyway?
The real technical term for hyperhidrosis would be sweating that's above and beyond what one needs to cool themselves.
How do you know if you are sweating more than your body needs?
To some degree, it's a subjective thing, and we certainly see patients in my clinic who think they have hyperhidrosis, and then they really don't seem to have that much excess sweating. So it's kind of a subjective judgment. Some people are embarrassed about sweat. Some people don't like sweaty hands, sweaty palms, things like that. It's just kind of a thing that you work out with your doctor that, yes, this is too much sweating. This is excess sweating. You're going through your clothes quickly. You're changing your shirt multiple times during the day. Your hands are dripping with sweat. Those kinds of things are really obvious, but it's a subjective thing sometimes.
And how common is this, or how often have you been seeing it more these days?
Well, the classic teaching, maybe you kind of alluded to that, is maybe about 1% to 3% of the population has excess sweating or hyperhidrosis. But one international study showed up to around, I think, 16 or 17%. So there is this idea that maybe there's excess sweating now. But there's a couple other reasons that might play into that.
And those are?
One of the things we look at when somebody's having excess sweating is, are they overweight? Do they have hot thyroid abnormalities? Do they have any other reason to be hot and sweaty? And you know, with obesity, what it is in the United States, I just saw a statistic the other day that the United States is the fattest country in the entire world. So there could be other factors at play.
Is it an indicator of something that could be more serious, perhaps heart disease? You, of course, mentioned thyroid problems and obesity, but is this a symptom of something bigger?
I think on rare occasion that's probably the case, and it's probably worthwhile discussing it with your doctor. There are some conditions like lymphomas and leukemias that can cause drenching night sweats and things like that. So it's important to talk about it with your doctor and flesh those things out. I would say more often than not, it's not a sign of very, very serious systemic disease or anything like that, but it's always good to have those things evaluated and discuss it with your physician.
And what are the usual treatments for this?
Well, they vary widely, you know. First logical treatment is antiperspirants and things like that. And we have both over-the-counter antiperspirants, and then we have kind of prescription type of antiperspirants that we use. And then we can advance in care. The next step for a lot of people is a pill called an anticholinergic, which kind of not only decreases sweating, but also decreases, you know, salivation and decreases, makes your eyes drier and things like that. So that sometimes works for some people, but sometimes the side effects are more severe than the original sweating. There's things like iontophoresis, which is a very interesting thing. It's kind of a little electric machine that you put your hands into a little bath with tap water, and it passes a low current through the tap water. And for some reason, and the mechanisms aren't entirely worked out, that can stop sweating for a lot of people. Then beyond that, one thing that you probably heard about is Botox. Botox does stop sweating, but it requires us to place Botox under the skin of the axilla or the hands or something like that. And you can imagine how painful injections are, for example, on the hands. There's another microwave technique that's kind of new. Not a lot of physicians have that, but you can actually microwave the skin, if you will, in very crude terms, and kind of kill off some of the eccrine glands that produce sweat. So there's a variety of treatments.
I also wanted to ask you about antiperspirants. You mentioned those. I've been seeing some reports about concerns with aluminum and antiperspirants. Is that something we should be concerned about?
Well, yeah, that's probably something that's worthy of mention because you will find it online, and it does cause a lot of concern. Aluminum has been associated with some diseases like breast cancer and Alzheimer's disease, but certainly those studies are somewhat flawed on occasion and not definitive, and sometimes people place too much stock in those studies. There's not any one thing that's incontrovertible that all doctors would agree is associated with aluminum, like breast cancer or Alzheimer's disease or something like that. But there's some weak associations on occasion, and sometimes there's need to further explore some of these associations. But I certainly don't want to leave listeners with the idea that it's a well-established, well-thought-out mechanism or anything that you need to be fearful of.
Dr. Whitney Hyde, Director of Dermatology at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, thanks for talking with us.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Coming up, how big data is helping recruit the next generation of guide dogs.
That's where IBM's Watson comes in.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS Radio News, the original radio news network, is now on Amazon Alexa. Amazon Alexa. Whether you have the Amazon Echo, Amazon Tap, or Echo Dot, you can listen to our newscasts just by setting CBS Radio News to your flash briefing.
Here's your flash briefing.
Or just ask for CBS News and hear our 24/7 stream through our partners at TuneIn.
This is CBS Radio News on TuneIn.
Wherever you want to listen, CBS Radio News is there.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The critically ill British baby at the center of a legal battle that turned political, Charlie Gard, has died. Sky News correspondent Adele Robinson takes a look back at his short journey.
Charlie was born a healthy baby boy, but within just months, diagnosed with a rare genetic disease. Despite his parents raising over £1 million to send him to the US for experimental treatment, doctors said it wouldn't work. The case went through the highest courts in the land.
The reality is that Charlie can't see, he can't hear, he can't move, he can't cry, he can't swallow.
Permission to appeal must be refused.
No! Sky's Adele Robinson reporting. Big data is helping recruit the next generation of guide dogs.
If there are two things that seem to be polar opposites, it's the warm exuberance of puppies and the cold intelligence of a supercomputer.
Watson can understand unstructured data.
At Guiding Eyes for the Blind in Yorktown Heights, New York, need has brought the two together.
The incidence of blindness is increasing at an incredibly and somewhat alarming rate.
Good job, Gus.
Thomas Panic lost his sight in his 20s. He is CEO of the Guide Dog Organization.
Do all these dogs that start off as a puppy, do they become guide dogs?
No, unfortunately not. Actually, only about 36% of the dogs make it.
The puppies need to be healthy, confident enough to take charge and make decisions on the fly, and most of all, they have to enjoy the work.
Good boy.
Very nice job.
For decades, Guiding Eyes for the Blind has been accumulating data, some of it provided by puppy raisers like Lorraine Trapani, who is also an IBM employee.
TJ is 4 months old, and I've already started to collect data on his behavior, things that he might be interested in, a bee that's flying by, things that we need to work on so that when he's a guide dog, he can ignore those distractions.
That's where IBM's Watson comes in. So far, Watson has analyzed 500,000 kilobytes of behavioral data, and that's just the beginning.
It's enabled Guiding Eyes to uncover insights that they couldn't previously do with the resource that they had.
The system was able to predict with 100% accuracy which dogs would make it to graduation.
Nobody.
It costs $50,000 to produce a guide dog, whether they graduate or not. Improving the odds for picking puppies will not only stretch the charity's precious dollars, it'll give dogs like TJ a better chance at a rewarding life. Don Daler, CBS News, Yorktown Heights, New York.
Good boy.
By the year 2060, Japan's population is expected to drop by a third to about 80 million people. Now the country's turning to robots to help fill the gaps. A new CBS News primetime series, CBSN On Assignment, looks at humanoids. Adam Yamaguchi traveled to the University of Osaka. Adam, what'd you learn?
Well, I met some incredibly, incredibly realistic robots. I sat down, in fact, for a pretty lengthy interview with one of the humanoids named Erica, and it was astounding to me just how realistic she was. I found myself forgetting that I was talking to a robot because all of the nonverbal cues that some of these humanoids exhibit really fool you into believing that they're actual human beings. The twitching, the blinking, and the fidgeting are all so human-like.
Why is Japan turning to humanoids, though?
Right. So Japan is facing the steepest population collapse in modern human history. And there are really two factors at play here. The first is not enough people are having babies. And the second is Japan has a very strict immigration policy, and there's just no political will to change that. And so Japan, which has already some of the most advanced robotics technologies in the world, sees robots as a natural solution to both its political and its demographic problems.
What can they do?
Many of the robots are seen in industry, so in factories and whatnot, not too dissimilar to what we see here in the U.S. But you're starting to see lots of commercial applications. You can go to hotels, you can go to restaurants, you can go to shopping centers and see robots taking doing the work that many humans do or did.
So the population's getting smaller. I imagine it's also getting older, too.
Japan has the longest life expectancy of any developed country in the world. And so the population problem is compounded by the fact that so many people there are old. They're just not of birthing age. And so that's reflected in this steep collapse. Japan right now is the 11th most populous nation in the world. And in our lifetimes will be a shadow of its former self. I believe in 30 years, the rate of decline or the rate of population loss in that country is going to accelerate to 900,000 per year, which is pretty staggering.
How far off do you think Japan is from using these humanoids to perhaps take care of older people, since they don't have enough people to do that for them?
That is not going to be too far off. That is precisely one of the biggest needs in this country right now. There's a huge, as you mentioned, huge elderly population. And as it stands, the nursing care industry relies mostly on foreigners. And it's the one pocket of the population in which lawmakers allow foreigners to come in and work. They're only allowed to work in Japan for a couple of years, and then they're sent out. And so this is where there's a real need.
What's the ethical concerns, though, of using it in that way, where you design a humanoid to look, to act like a human, but it doesn't have the same emotion or presence as a human?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things is really important to understand about Japanese culture is that the Japanese don't necessarily distinguish between living, breathing entities and inanimate objects. There's a term called animism, and it's the belief that all objects, all inanimate objects, have a soul. So if you were to ask a Japanese person about the idea of interacting and interfacing with a humanoid, they probably wouldn't have the same reaction or the same ethical questions and concerns that you or I might have.
Adam, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
You can watch Adam's full report on the first episode of CBSN On Assignment. It airs Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on CBS, and on our digital streaming network, CBSN. That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to Weekend Roundup at cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.